morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Today is Monday, January the 10th. And here are some of the stories we are covering for you this morning. Aid agencies have suspended their work in parts of Ethiopia's Tigray region after a deadly airstrike on a camp for displaced people. UNICEF has expressed outrage, saying that the attack may constitute a violation of international humanitarian law.
Refugee camps and IDP settlements are civilian objects under international humanitarian law, and they provide humanitarian services, and that includes schools hosting displaced children and families.
UNICEF spokesman Louis Vigneault-Dubois. After nearly 2 years of closure due to the COVID-19 pandemic, students in Uganda are returning back to school. We have some of their reactions.
Not only is the learning, but also the fun we have at school. Yeah, I'm very excited.
And Nigerian authorities say the death toll from attacks by armed groups in northwest Zamfara state this past week has risen to more than 200. We have those stories plus the Africa Cup of Nations underway in Cameroon coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. And for our top story, aid workers and eyewitnesses told media that an airstrike in Ethiopia's northern Tigray region had killed more than 50 people. The Reuters news agency reports at least 30 others have been wounded after a camp for the internally displaced people was hit Friday night. Gelmo Dawit reports from Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa.
An air strike in Ethiopia's Tigray region reportedly killed 56 people and injured at least 30, including children, in a camp for displaced people. Aid workers told Reuters Saturday, citing eyewitnesses and the local authorities. Ethiopian government officials have not confirmed the reported strike that hit an area of the Debi town near the border with Eritrea. Aid workers, who asked not to be named because they are not authorized to speak to the media, told Reuters this strike occurred Friday night. An aid worker said victims were brought to Shireshul General Hospital, adding the camp was a residence for elderly women and children. The reported air strike happened after the government released detained Tigray People's Liberation Front senior leaders and other politicians Friday night in an attempt to curb the country's crisis. Ethiopia's government communication service announced the release of Sabahat Nega, one of the founders of the TPLF, Abay Oldu, a former head of Tigray region, Jawar Mohammed, Iskender Nega, and others. Speaking to the state-run news agency Saturday, Ethiopia's Minister for Justice, Gideon Timotheus, said the individuals were released after the government dropped criminal charges against them. Their charges were dropped to facilitate the national dialogue set to happen soon, he said. As you know, the country has established a commission for national dialogue, and releasing them will make the process more inclusive and valid too. Ethiopia introduced the process of creating a national dialogue commission in December. Justice Minister Timotheus says the government wants every part of society in the country to take part in the process. In remarks Saturday, he revealed the government has also dropped charges against Debre Tsion Gebre Mikael, Tigray's region head, and five other TPLF officials. But there is no confirmation whether the TPLF will be part of the upcoming national dialogue. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has welcomed the decision to release detainees. He has called on the two parties to end hostilities and launch a credible and inclusive national dialogue. Tigray forces announced in December they were pulling out of parts of Ethiopia's Amhara and Afar regions as part of a ceasefire agreement. In a later address to the United Nations Secretary General at that time, Gebre Mikael said demands, which includes establishment of a no-fly zone over Tigray's airspace. Aid agencies told Reuters this week at least 146 people have been killed and 213 injured in airstrike in Tigray since October 18. But the Ethiopian government denies targeting civilians during a 14-month conflict with Tigray forces. Gelmo Dawit for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
And aid agencies have suspended operations in an area of the Tigray region where the airstrike took place. And meanwhile, UNICEF has expressed outrage at the airstrikes, saying in a statement that refugee camps and IDP settlements are considered civilian objects, and therefore attacking them may constitute a violation of international humanitarian law. UNICEF spokesman Louis Vigneault-Dubois told VOA that his organization is continuing calls for both sides to cease hostilities.
Refugee camps and IDP settlements are civilian objects under international humanitarian law, and they provide humanitarian services, and that includes schools hosting displaced children and families. Failing to respect and protect them from attacks may constitute a violation of international humanitarian law. UNICEF renews its call for an immediate cessation of hostilities. We saw initial signs of progress in the past several weeks, so we urge all parties to the conflict to build on that to adhere to international human rights, humanitarian, and refugee law. We also urge all parties to facilitate humanitarian access and to protect all children from harm.
That was UNICEF spokesperson Louis Vigneault-Dubois. And TPLF spokesman Getachew Reda claimed in a Twitter post Sunday that the Eritrean military had launched attacks against its fighters in northwestern Tigray on Saturday. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. Nigerian authorities say the death toll from attacks by armed groups in northwest Zamfara state this past week has risen to more than 200 people. The attacks, which began Tuesday, lasted until Thursday across 9 villages. Authorities say more villagers remain unaccounted for.
Zamfara state residents say the attacks were retaliation of last week's military raid against the bandits. Military airstrikes last Monday around the armed men's hideout in the Gusami Forest hideout, as well as the Tamre village in Zamfara, reportedly killed more than 100 bandits, including two of their leaders. Large numbers of angry motorcycle-riding bandits hit back at local communities in reprisal for days, shooting people on sight and burning down houses. State authorities initially said 58 people were killed, but authorities on Saturday said more than 200 bodies were buried and scores of other people were missing. Last week's attacks are among the deadliest seen in the region in years. Authorities say up to 10,000 people were displaced and too afraid to return to their homes. On Saturday, Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari said in a statement, quote, "The latest attacks on innocent people by the bandits is an act of desperation by mass murderers now under relentless pressure from our military forces," end quote. Security analyst Kabiru Adamu says security forces have been making progress and gives a reason.
One of the key bandits by name Bello Toriji wrote a letter last month where he indicated his willingness to, as it were, end what he's doing. The letter was very clear.
Zamfara State Police spokesperson Shehu Mohammed said authorities were gathering intelligence on the attacks from the villages and victims and would aid future operations.
The information we got will surely assist the security agencies in trying to record more successes in their subsequent operations.
Northwest and central Nigeria are recording spikes in attacks on communities, looting and mass kidnappings for ransom that began in late 2020. The government has repeatedly promised to address the issue. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Voice of America.
In response to Mali delaying elections, the Economic Community of West Africa States, ECOWAS, is imposing economic sanctions on the country, including closing their borders with Mali and severing diplomatic ties. The 15-state regional bloc said on Sunday after an emergency summit in the Ghanaian capital, Accra, that it found the proposed timetable for a transition back to constitutional rule in Mali totally unacceptable. Mali's military government proposed in December a 5-year extension of the transition to civilian rule after originally agreeing to a period of 18 months. Protesters gathered Saturday in Bamako to call for a return to democracy. This is the first public demonstration since the government's announcement of a 5-year plan, a contrast to the many pro-military demonstrations that have been held in the country. Annie Risenbach has more from Bamako.
About 100 protesters gathered at noon at Bamako's Martyrs Monument to demand a swift return to civilian rule after Mali's military government proposed a 5-year transition plan in December with the next presidential elections in 2026. The Martyrs Monument commemorates March 26, 1991, when government soldiers fired on pro-democracy protesters, killing many. This assembly marks the first anti-transition demonstration since the government announced the 5-year plan. Ibrahim Kalilu Thera, one of the demonstration organizers, said military leaders proposed a 5-year transition period without consulting the people.
En réalité, s'ils avaient proposé au moins une transition, une période courte de 6 mois, le peuple pouvait comprendre.
In reality, he says, if they had proposed at least a transition of a short period of 6 months, the people could have understood. But we can tell that these people don't have the will to organize elections. Not for February, because they could have organized for February. But there weren't prior arrangements. There weren't preparations. There wasn't the political will. Sina Thera, 23, a student at the University of Bamako, was originally in support of the military government when they first took power in August 2020 in a coup d'etat that ousted President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita. The August 2020 coup followed months of anti-government protests in Bamako, some that ended in the killing of protesters by security forces. When the current military leaders first came to power, they were met by large crowds and widespread support in the streets of Bamako.
Avant, je les soutenais beaucoup. Ouais, parce que ils ont venu parachever la lutte.
He says that before, he supported them a lot, because they came to finish the fight started by the Malian population. Once the fight is done, though, and the fight was victorious, it's time. The promise they made is very sacred. They set a deadline. A coalition of major political parties rejected the military government's 5-year transition proposition earlier this week. Mohamed Ag Asori, a political analyst and consultant, says it's not so important whether or not the march Saturday has a large number of people, because for months there was a complete lack of opposition. Some time ago, he says, there were only supporters of the transition that could be seen here and there. There's now an emergence of a new poll, a new opposition that's organizing itself. And people listen to what they're saying. It's just the beginning. There have been press conferences. Now they're starting to demonstrate on the ground. And I think there will be more actions in the future in this sense. He adds that everything will depend, however, on what happens this Sunday, January 9th, when the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, a 15-nation regional bloc with a mandate to promote economic integration, holds an extraordinary summit on Mali in Accra, which may lead to an agreement between ECOWAS leaders and Mali's military government on a shortened transition period. Annie Reisenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
After nearly 2 years of closure due to the COVID-19 pandemic, primary and secondary school students in Uganda will this Monday return back to school. Both teachers and students are in high spirits ahead of the reopening. Reporter Mugume Davis Rwakarinji visited one school and files this report from Kampala, Uganda.
A group of teachers and support staff of Buziga Islamic Primary School in Buziga, a Kampala suburb, engage in different activities as they prepare for the reopening of school. Some teachers pin reading charts on the board, while others sweep the classrooms. Lumbuye Awali Muloli, who teaches in upper primary school, explains.
Okay, as you see here, these ones are very busy cleaning for us the chairs. These chairs are for P2 kids. They have been dirty. It's been long without underuse, so they're cleaning them as they prepare for the learners to come. So as we go this way, you can see the teachers are very busy working on the classroom environment.
Lumbuye says he missed teaching, but with no sources of income, he had to engage in some income-earning businesses, selling some foodstuffs so he can support his family.
There are some activities I've been doing within the COVID lockdown, and they yield a lot of money than teaching. But, you know, once you do a job and then you just called by God to do that job, well, even if you go where, you will come back. I just want to say teaching is in blood, and then I believe it's a call from God.
Schools in Uganda were closed in March 2020 as a way to curtail the rapid spread of COVID-19 in the country. Universities and higher institutions of learning have since subsequently been reopened, albeit in staggered manner, to allow standard operating procedures such as social distance. There have been concerns that some teachers may not return to school after engaging in other lucrative businesses. Nadia Wilberforce, the headmaster of this school, confirms. He also says, apart from missing some teachers, some support staff won't be returning back to school. The school has also had to take the available teachers through psychosocial support because...
2 years. It is something big. Because now we are going to receive different categories of learners. The stubborn ones, those ones who are pregnant, those ones with immorality. And now we have trained the teachers. We have trained the support staff, I mean the matrons, cooks, askaris, so that they are prepared of the kind of children they are going to receive.
Agure David Kibenge, the permanent secretary in Uganda's Ministry of Gender, Labour and Social Development, says they are well aware of the plight of teachers, mainly those in private institutions. He says the government has availed some 300,000 Uganda shillings, or about $100 package, to teachers to help them cope with financial difficulties as they resume teaching.
Schools, private schools especially, have been closed since March last year, while the vast majority of sectors have been fully or partially reopened, the education sector remained largely closed.
Teachers in government schools continue to receive payment from the government. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Education advocates and researchers estimate that COVID-19-related school closures have affected more than 1 billion learners worldwide. In Africa, they say, the impact of the K-12 student education has significantly widened the achievement gaps, especially among historically disadvantaged students, like girls. So after almost 2 years at home, how are students in Uganda reacting to the news of their schools reopening? We reached some of them as they prepared to head out to their schools.
My name is Ladona Karen. I'm in year 10. I'm so glad that we are reporting back to school, and we thank the president for that. I think this has been 2 years now since we have not been going to school, and it has really affected me in the learning. And not only is the learning, but also the fun we have at school. And yeah, I'm very excited.
I'm Akakunda Dorothy. I'm 16. I will be 16 in August. My God, you have said okay, I will be happy because I missed the school when I was in holiday. At this pandemic, I've been selling masks and shoes on the road, on the street.
I'm called Niyongabo Cedric, and well, we've been locked for some time, so it will be a bit new to us. It will be like going back to school in a fresh way. It will be a bit hard to cope up with the situation, but I guess with time we shall get used again. And been playing football mostly, but then I've been helping my parents out with some stuff. I've also been learning some, I've been having some music lessons.
My name's Amkalema Jordan. I feel well when I'm going back to school. That is very good from the lockdown. It has been a long time without going to school. I was working, I was here with my mom, trying to help her. Then I'm going back to school.
My name is Jemima. I'm in year 12. I'm so glad that the president was able to open schools, not only for me, but for other people, like other kids, because most teens, like girls, have been getting pregnancies and all that because of the lockdown that was, I think, 2 years now. But now since the president has opened, it will help to reduce on that. And I know everyone out there is excited about going to school and having fun and seeing their friends and all that. And it would help to catch up because most people have grown old in their classes. Like, you can find someone in P7 and they are 17. But now since the president has opened and he said that everyone will skip a class and go to the next class, that was so nice of him, because it will enable us to at least not feel bad about our ages in different classes.
Those are Ugandan students reacting to news that their schools have reopened after 2 years of shutdowns due to the COVID-19 pandemic. And now it's time for Daybreak Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, Jackson. Begin the sports with the 33rd edition of the African Cup of Nations, which got underway on Sunday in Cameroon at the magnificent 60,000-seater Olympic Stadium. The Nations Cup has been delayed by a year as a result of the coronavirus pandemic. CAF President Patrice Motsepe, in his opening remarks at the tournament, said Africa is sending a strong message to the rest of the world by hosting the tournament.
The last remark I want to make is, let us send a message, because we want to work together with Europe, we want to work together with football, we want to develop football in Africa, but we also want to send a message to the 54 countries. The CAF, AFCON, Total Energies, AFCON Cup is in Cameroon, is going to be the best that has ever been taken place, and we want to inspire all the people of Africa. We must believe.
The first game in Olympic Stadium, which followed a colorful opening ceremony, served up an absorbing contest. Cameroonian captain Vincent Aboubakar scored a brace of penalties as host Cameroon came from behind to beat COVID-ravaged Burkina Faso 2-1 in the opening game. Gustavo Sangare had given Burkina Faso the lead, but Aboubakar equalized from the spot 5 minutes before the interval after a VAR review. The 29-year-old, who netted the winner in the 2017 Cup of Nations final against Egypt, then scored what proved to be the decider in the first half stoppage time, and was only denied a hat-trick by an offside flag after the break. The second game of the day saw Cape Verde claiming a key victory to open their African Cup of Nations campaign, defeating Group A rivals Ethiopia 1-0. The match hinged on an early red card suffered by the Wailea Ibex, allowing the Blue Sharks to control the game and strike through Julio Tavares as they picked up all 3 points and joined Cameroon at the head of their group standings. Some Cameroonian fans who were at the Olympic Stadium in Yaoundé told me the victory. Was hard fought, even though it was won through penalties.
Yes, we deserve to win, and our guys actually had to do more because we had lots of lapses in our attack line, and so on. The goals that we had to register today were supposed to be more. I think that's what I think about the match.
And honestly, it was a great game, fantastic game. We started very well, but at the end, initially, at the beginning it was a bit weird because the score was a bit awkward, but finally, I do believe we deserve the win, and we did it. Fantastic for the first game. What else?
And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Yaoundé, Cameroon, covering the African Cup of Nations. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
And that's it for this edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voanews.com. We are also on all social media platforms. So we are on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Just search for VOA Africa. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very good week ahead.
This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.